And welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces with Walt Ruble and Peter Goodman and Bill Diven.
Good afternoon, or good morning, I guess it actually is. But
It's so great to see you. For a long time, I keep seeing your brother, Bob, and I initially kept wanting to call him Bill because I had known you better back in the day.
Well, and Bob got to be so popular in this town, some of us had to leave.
You couldn't get any attention anymore?
Yeah, no.
This is what GPT chat said a Bill Diven was.
Oh,
I looked
no.
it up out of here.
It must be true.
But it said that Bill Diven is a longtime New Mexico journalist based in or near Albuquerque, known especially for his work covering politics, local government, and infrastructure issues. Says where you've been published. He's also been involved in independent reporting and commentary about energy and water policy, often writing with a skeptical eye toward state and corporate power.
Okay, well, at least some of that's true for sure. You know, I'm not one of the skeptical reporters who leans in one way or another politically. I worked with
you a... You don't?
No, which is not to say that I don't lean one way or the other. It's just that
not
that's...
Not being a reporter.
Yeah, that, right. not being a reporter, you don't get into that. And my last gig, I was basically the reporting and photography staff for a monthly paper in Placidas, about 20 miles north of Albuquerque. Had a real conservative ex-military man on the county commission. And, you know, he pretty much figured out which way I did lean, and he would introduce me as his friend the communist. But he also, in one of his introductions, said, but he knows how to play it down the middle. So that's been kind of my entire shtick here as a reporter. And, you know, as a photographer, you don't really get to lean one way or the other. You just shoot video or take pictures. But it's been a good gig, so.
So I remember you as a, I don't know, maybe late teenager or 20. But when did you graduate from high here?
1969. Okay. I was in the, what would that have been, the second graduating class at Mayfield, I think?
Just about.
Yeah.
Which is now going to be refurbished.
Again.
And you started journalism. I know you were with the Sun News. Were you with the Roundup before that?
I was at the Roundup. And, I was going to be a civil engineer, but that's a whole other story we do not need to get into. But then I discovered you can make money with a camera because the yearbook paid for photographs. And after that, everything kind of went downhill. I was the AP photo stringer here for a while I was a student. And then I got my degree in photojournalism and motion pictures and immediately took my first job in radio.
But you came in it through the visual side.
I did. And without going into a long story again, it's kind of, you know, one of these accidental things where you've got these almost hobbies that kind of lead to one thing and another. And then you find out that somebody's got to pay for the film because you're taking so many pictures. And then you find out you can get paid to do that. And between the photography and the reporting, that's 50-some years now.
The great thing, I think, about being a photographer, even more than a reporter, is you get to be right there. I mean, you have to be right there, or you're no good if you're not on the scene and you can't, your camera, your lens can't capture it. So are there, I know, when, let me ask you, are there any memorable moments where you got the photo, but not only that, you got to be on the scene where if you hadn't had that job, you never would have had that opportunity.
You know, excuse me. The first thing that comes to mind is the only time I've ever been tear gassed. And that was at Locust and University in 1973 during what I refer to as the Great Sex Riot of 1973. After the Board of Regents shot down intervisitation between the men's and women's dorms. And by that point, I'd gotten to know a lot of people in this town, and I got somebody called and said, you might want to take your camera down to Locust and University at whatever time it was. And the cops showed up, and you had some state cops and some city cops and some deputies, and it was not a riot, but they decided to clear the intersection, so they started pushing the crowd back down Locust into the campus, and then they unloaded a barrage of tear gas, but they hadn't checked the wind.
Mm.
So I've got pictures of the poor cops out in the middle of the intersection with their eyes ablaze, and so then you know the tear gas rolled back over the police and back over me and some other people. So and you know that's the kind of stuff that sticks with you, the 10,000 gallon
right.
gasoline truck that blew up almost in front of me when I was in TV in Albuquerque coming down the highway. And that's one of those cases where you're in the right place and you get trapped inside the police line before they can keep you out.
Right.
And the fire guys weren't going to throw me out because I was shooting video of them, you know, close-up shots and stuff that you would never get today unless you were somehow embedded with the fire department. So between chasing ambulances and making some money and not having a real job, I mean, it was just, you know, this has been a great way to make a living.
My favorite story from when I was at the Sun News was we had a photographer named Robin Zielinski who had heard that there was a police standoff on the street a couple blocks from where she happened to be. She went over there, found it, knocked on a door across the street, got permission to go up on their roof and shot the whole thing from as the police ended up shooting the guy.
Oh.
And yeah, she had the whole thing. It was amazing. But that's the ingenuity that photographers, you know, to get on that scene, you got to do whatever you got to do.
When I won a National Photography Award from the National Federation of Press Women. This would be a year and a half, 2 years ago, and that's a picture I shot from my roof.
Yes.
Where the police were chasing somebody, and the guy wrecked his car coming down our road, and I went up on the roof, and they didn't shoot him, but they had, you know, the guy's got a gun out, and the poor suspect is lying on the ground looking dead, but he just right. kind of, he was so loaded on meth or something, he'd just fallen over. So,
but it happened right in front of your house?
Right in front of my house, yeah.
Well.
But I'd heard it on the scanner, so sure. I was following this while it was
right,
going on.
Right.
And then a neighbor called up and said, what do I do? This guy just rolled his car over right in front of us. And so, yeah, I'll go up on the roof and take a look. So. Yeah, and, so, and you know, you get news people together. We could probably all sit here and just start, you know, telling war stories and yeah. totally bore the audience.
Right.
But you know, Las Cruces was a good place, a really good news town, and a good place to start because it was still relatively small, and the you know, it's easy to get to know a lot of the cops, and so they know who you are, so you're not intimidating, and they know that if they tell you, get your ass out of here. That you will at least move a few feet
right. yeah,
and go right. find a new location. So you're out of the line of fire or whatever.
So how do you feel about the, you know, fact that maybe we're watching journalism disappear before our very eyes in the sense, you know, feel like it gruesome. The Sun News is shrinking constantly. It'd probably be just online in a while. The raid used to work on radio, and you know, were several local radio stations that had news departments and actually discussed news and discussed local events and interviewed people and all of that. And most of that, you know, nobody other than us and KRWG a little talks about local events now.
Well, when I mentioned having a radio job, which was rather short-lived, this was at KOBE, and I was the reporter, and I was the farm news director, which actually was great background as I got deeper into reporting because we had a farm and ranch page on the Journal when I worked there, and we had to fill that. And we had the Associated Press had a monthly contest among the radio and print stations, newspapers. To who could submit the most stories to AP over the course of a month, and you basically all you got was an attaboy in the monthly newsletter, and there were radio stations all over the place contributing stuff. You could open up the Journal, and instead of having three stories on page one with one big picture to fill space, there'd be five, six columns of multiple stories, and you could really get to know the state. Now, of course, that's not happening. I try not to get too depressed about what's happened to my industry because it has changed so much, and so much not for the better. I keep having hopes we're hitting sort of a bottom, at least with the media. We need to hit a bottom here pretty soon with the country and find some way to go back up, but that's another discussion for another time. What is happening, there are some encouraging signs. For one thing, you're getting local radio stations, low-power radio. We've got one in Placidas that our Las Placidas Association, which is a nonprofit that's been operating there for a long time, got a surplus construction trailer from Los Alamos that took an awful lot of work to clean up and turn into a studio. And it's parked on the property of our land grant next to the land grant office, right behind the Senior Citizen Center. So there's a, you know, a nice little neighborhood there. And you're starting to get more local newspapers. There's the paper. My last job was 10-plus years with our local paper in Placidas, and it was a monthly, but it was a fat monthly. And when you start seeing what you read here about me, that's, a lot of that relates to working for that paper, because I was the Lone Ranger, basically. So you're covering government, you're covering crime, you're covering politics, and that's, you know, general assignments, GA. And that kind of sums up my whole career, because I've never really singularly, you know, specialized in something.
Right, except trains.
Well, and then there's trains. But with the news game that I've had all these years, I would work train stories into the regular reporting sometimes, because Amtrak would be an issue. Every once in a while, I could do a feature story on something related to railroads. And I've also contributed to some railroad magazines, and I'm still trying to do that. Except they've
gone through. What's the genesis of your fascination with trains?
Well, to hear my mother tell it, I was a fussy baby, and they would take me down to the train station to watch the local switch engine, which was steam at the time, do its work. And when it left town, that was my cue. It was time for my nap. And so I blame it on the imprinting of that. But then we're in a small town that had multiple passenger trains through it every day. You could go into Chicago, be in Chicago in about 90 minutes, go to Cubs games, go Christmas shopping. And so trains were just a part of life. This was nothing unique to me. And I was the kid who hung out at the station. And then in a different era, I probably would have learned telegraphy. There's a lost art. And gone to work for a railroad. But when I got out of high school in 69, it was a really bad time for the railroads. And so I go off to college and start in civil engineering and end up in photojournalism and motion pictures, which is part of why I'm down here. I delivered my student film to somebody who's doing a documentary on our old pal, Buddy Wanzer.
Yeah, Julia Smith. We should note that there's going to be another showing of Devil's Mistress. Did you see that when it came out?
No, that's before my time. I think that came out in, was it 63?
65.
Oh, 65. Okay.
Before my time here. I arrived in 69.
Okay, we got here in 64, so I was around, but I would have been 12 or 13.
Yeah, you would have been not choosing what the movies were going to be that you were going to see. But she's doing another showing of that on a Sunday, maybe a week from Sunday.
I think that's right. It's the last Sunday in October.
Okay. And is it the last one? Anyway, The Devil's Mistress, anybody who's interested might want to just Google that.
Well, what she's working on also speaks to the creative atmosphere in Las Cruces. This isn't like a world-famous art center like Santa Fe is or was. But there's always been this, at least from my experience here, there's always been this base level of creative talent that was not just working on its own stuff, but it was, you know, part of the community. And I'm thinking of, because Buddy Wanzer and John Hansel set up the Campus Film Society.
Right.
And they brought movies to this town that you were not going to see anyplace else. Some of them controversial, some of them pretty obscure, but you knew you were going to see something interesting.
Yeah, a lot of foreign films. And that was, in those days, something you didn't find, except, you know, at some colleges. Not a lot of them in those days, as far as I can tell.
Well, you had to have a city big enough to have an art house movie theater, and this was not Las Cruces.
And, of course, the film study that we got to do here was at a time when, you know, I'm told USC, you didn't get to use the cameras until you were a grad student. That may be apocryphal or exaggerating, but certainly with Buddy, I mean, you came in and, you know, you took a class in, you know, filmmaking or documentary, whatever. They were all the same, yeah. Basically, make a film. To make a 10-minute film, he didn't care if you went to class or not. And, pretty much the first, after he'd shown everybody cameras the first week or two, you just came in, checked out a camera.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to consult with him, he was there. You want to have coffee and talk about anything, he was there. If you want to just take the camera and do what happened to be in your head, you did it. And, of course, we had Mark Medoff doing, at that point, theater. He wasn't interested in film yet.
Yeah.
We now have, I think I checked this out a while back and talked to my cousin who lives up there. If you want to go to the theater, amateur theater, in Santa Fe versus here, you have a lot more options here than Santa Fe. And, of course, there are a lot of artists. It really is a creative community.
Well, and this town has been good for that. And, you know, I took two classes from him, and the one that I made the film for was Techniques of Cinema. Mm-hmm. I had to go online and try and find the 1970-71 course catalog to find out what class I took. I took the class. I made a film, and I saw it yesterday for the first time in 40 years at a slow speed. Just they weren't digitizing it yet. They were just, you know, taking a look at it to see what kind of shape it was in. And after all these years, it's in pretty good shape, and it holds together visually. This is not great art by any means. because my thing was print. I wanted to be a newspaper photographer. And then as things evolve, and that's something about how the business has changed, especially, you know, I've been either in Albuquerque or Las Cruces all this time. And especially in Albuquerque, if you got, you know, angry where you were working, or they got angry with you, you could find another job,
right,
in town. And I didn't set out to be in TV, but I found myself there. And working mostly as a photographer, a videographer, and Buddy's class, and being the Las Cruces stringer, mm-hmm, for an Albuquerque TV station, I parlayed that into a job.
Right.
So that's 1980, which is when I basically left Cruces, not necessarily intending to come back. But then from the TV job, I went to work for the Albuquerque Journal, and that job was down here. So that's six years down here, covering the border. And the Journal at that time had an office space right next door to the door to the Music Box.
Right.
They had a bureau chief, me, a part-time college kid, a part-time semi-retired reporter. We always had a photographer. They ran the circulation out of this building. A truck would come down every night, or about midnight or so, with the Bulldog edition of the Journal, and they would bring that day's Albuquerque Tribune, which, of course, no longer exists. So you'd get the Albuquerque Tribune down here. I think we sold five or six every day, something like that. And that was valuable for covering the border. You know, that's you mm-hmm, you know, it's one thing to live down here and go with your buddies and have a drink or two in Juarez, but that's not the same as going right over the border with your not quite fluent Spanish and being able to cover things and, you know, finding somebody who would speak English who would interpret for you. And right. Down there during there were no political uprisings, but down there during one of the national elections, and you're up on the stage behind the guy running for governor, or running for president, I guess it was, and there's just this mass of people out there that I'd never seen before. So we could get into other war stories about, well, actually, that's kind of where we're going, war stories with our, the things that happened in the career.
Right.
And I still write, and I still take pictures, and that's to a greater or lesser degree all I've ever done. But at least that's something that's flexible that you could do things with and have some fun. And
when you left the paper in Placidas, did they replace you, or was that the end of it?
The people who owned it had sold it once before and then had to sue to get it back. And so that had been before I went to work for them. And they had run the paper since 1983, so 40 years or so, and they were ready to sell again, and they did. And hated to see it go, and I was ready to do something else myself. Plus, the new owners came in and made a lot of changes that we could go into. But the main thing is the paper survived. But these people had tried to save an alt-weekly in Albuquerque and missed it by a little bit, so they started their own alt-weekly. Then they found out the paper in Corrales, which is north of Albuquerque, was for sale, and that guy had been running the paper out of his garage for 40 years and was going to shut it down if nobody bought it. So they bought that paper. While doing that, they found out our paper was for sale. They bought our paper, and then on the other side of the mountain, somebody who had started the paper in what we call the East Mountains, out of Edgewood, found out that just called up and said, hey, you know, we're dying here. COVID really hit us hard. Can you save us? So suddenly they own 1, 2, 3, 4 papers that just about loop around the Sandia Mountains. And these are, you know, they're little papers, and they don't have a lot of staff, and they actually had to do some layoffs to survive, and their grant funding has gone away, a lot of it. But they're hanging in there.
Good. Yeah, that's what I hoped. I hope that would be the answer.
So there's a base there that I hope enlarges over time, and so I haven't totally written off the news business, but we could have a really long conversation about what I think is wrong with it. So next time you want to spend a couple of hours here, but we'd have to make some coffee.
Yeah, sorry, we don't have any coffee. Let's switch topics to Las Cruces, because as I said, I came out here in '69. It was 40,000 people, including the university. It was a lot smaller. Telshore had come in, and a couple of blocks beyond Imperial Ridge. But there wasn't anything between, you know, there and the mountains. And then I came back every year if I was in this country for a long time, but I didn't move back till 2010, 2011. So for me, it was a real shock to see there were these, yeah, the whole sort of Sonoma Ranch area and all that. Now, there were these whole other towns up there in the where I used to dirt bike. I know it was more gradual for you, but how, when you think about the Cruces you grew up in, or at least went to high school, versus what it is now, what comes to mind?
When I come visit, one thing I usually do is take at least one long drive to kind of refamiliarize myself with things. I also have a tendency to stay in the valley and kind of pretend all the other stuff doesn't exist.
Yes.
Because it is possible to hang out more or less in downtown and up and down Main Street and still have a sense of what this town used to be. Although, you know, they raised downtown when I was in high school, and we could have, there's another discussion we could have about urban renewal and how that transpired. I wrote a little bit about that, and somebody was going after Tommy Graham, who was the mayor at the time, for basically accusing him of taking money to tear down downtown. Oh. And I'm sure he didn't do that. I'm sure he would not have taken money, but he was somebody who had grown up here and just saw this as just the town he had always lived in, with all these old mud buildings and the business people who wanted better property and better infrastructure. So that's where downtown went. But his predecessor, I'm not sure his name was McCutcheon. His son was McCutcheon, but he might have been adopted. Anyway, that mayor did not grow up here. And he looked around downtown and said, oh, man, what an amazing place. And when urban renewal came in the late 50s, he kicked him out. He said, no, you don't want to mess with this. This is too important. So, you know, I try not to whine too much about what has become Las Cruces, although it looks like Main Street, you're finally starting to see some life down there.
Yeah. No, yeah. They made, in common with a lot of other towns, they made a huge mistake. And tried to make it shopping malls out somewhere and forget about downtown.
Actually, through the renovation of the Rio Grande Theater and the downtown plaza, they really have revitalized that part of the town.
And ripping up the mall.
Yeah,
the first time I drove down Main Street when it was open, you know, you almost drive up on the curb because you're going, man, look at this. This is the feeling had come back, at least the geographic feeling and some of the attitudinal feeling had come back, even though it's nowhere near the place that it used to be. And there were people fighting at the time, saying that Cruces should be preserved, the downtown should be preserved, if for nothing else, as a movie set. And, of course, now the movie business is huge, and the 1920s, more or less, downtown is extinct, save a few buildings. But it's nice to see commerce downtown again.
Yeah.
Which, of course, was always a thing. And then the mall just sucked the life out of downtown, and there we were. And there was actually Tommy Graham tried to get a bond issue passed to turn the St. Genevieve's site into a city park after they tore down St. Genevieve's, which I always have to tell people, tearing down St. Genevieve's was not urban renewal. Repeat after me, it was not urban renewal. That was a private deal between the bank and the Archdiocese of El Paso.
Oh. So that's not the way it's remembered.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's, I wrote something in the bulletin about that when somebody went after Tommy Graham. And he was dead by that point, but he and I had talked about this, and I figured I have to defend this guy because his problem was not any kind of corruption. It was lack of vision. And that'll do as much damage as corruption sometimes.
Yeah. But Tommy Graham? We could do a show on Tommy Graham sometime.
We certainly could.
we're running out of time. Want to thank you, Bill Diffin, for joining us the last half hour. Maybe we'll do this again one time when you're in town again.
Well, you're very welcome. And we've also you confirmed the danger of putting news people in front of microphones.
Oh, I'm sure.
I also wanted to say something. It's really good that you guys have got a low power station here. This is a big deal.
Yes.
It is.
We recently celebrated our 8th anniversary, and we don't take it for granted. We don't.